On today's episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast, we're going to talk about growing hop within your organization. The full article to this is available over at www.thehopnerd.com if you want to check that out as well. Here we go. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at thehopnerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Hello, howdy, everybody. Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd Podcast, the Hop Nerd LLC. Welcome, 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 welcome to another episode of this here podcast. I'm very thankful that you're here. I greatly appreciate you being here. If you like these episodes, if you love these episodes, if you just got to have more of these episodes, do me a big favor, share them. It helps a ton. It helps a lot more than you could ever imagine. Same thing with all the stuff, the resources and all the guides and the videos. We've been putting a lot of effort into making sure that we got good, quick kind of videos and some a little bit more expansive happening over on YouTube, and really I've been pumping them out a bunch on LinkedIn. But believe it or not, LinkedIn does not like videos. They want like those AI generated crap posts, and we know exactly what we're talking about. You guys have seen them. I know that I see them all the time. They have like 47,000 emojis in them, and you know, it's like, ready to rocket yourself to success. Here are 12 tips on rocketing yourself to success with me, the master of rocketing yourself to success. Here we go. And it like pumps it out, you know, it kind of like pumps those things over there. We've seen them. We see those things. Some of them, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, to be a, you know, AI kind of generated crap, some of it's not like terrible. But that's the stuff that LinkedIn likes. And I don't know. It just doesn't seem to like our videos all that much because, yeah, for whatever reason. You guys seem to like them. But the problem is that a lot of folks that are just kind of scrolling, you don't get to see them. A lot of folks tell me, like, I didn't even realize this video was here. I found it like a month later. I know. So if you see that stuff, if you like it, if you share it, if you repost it, all that stuff, it helps an absolute ton. Same thing with the blog posts over on the website. If you find them valuable, please send those links to others. Share them on LinkedIn. Again, it helps us take this message of human and organizational performance, a message that has really only scratched the surface of industry, it lets us take that far and wide, and it is very much appreciated on our end. Always, you know that I'm going to continue to thank you to a fault for being a part of our little community, for being a part of this little thing that we call the Hop Nerd Podcast and the Hop Nerd LLC. It means an absolute ton to us. And if you need a hand with your hop journey, if you need a hand with fundamentals, learning teams, coaching and facilitating of learning teams, learning explorations, and on and on and on and on and on, there's no project too big or too small. I work with some other little tight-knit group of folks, a little community within the community, to help to deliver some larger projects as well. If you need a hand with anything, again, big or small, head over to the website, or the easiest way to do this is just send me an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. So onward to our topic for the day, growing hop within your organization. And let me preface this a little bit. Again, I mentioned at the very, very, very beginning, did you like that new little change up in the music? I'm trying to just change it out here, there, just to give you something a little different. I still left our little intro here a little funky. You know my love for kind of funky music. So I left that there. I'll change it at some point again once I get tired of it. But I told you at the beginning that there's a full article available over on the website. Got a lot of good feedback on the article. A lot of people have found it super valuable just to either give them some ideas on their journey as they're first starting, or give them some ideas on their journey as they're like really in the thick of it, or even to just kind of compare and contrast with kind of what they've done, what I'm kind of familiar with, my thoughts, my ideas, my story. It's nice. I've got a couple of those emails like, okay, I'm not crazy. You just helped to confirm some of my thoughts around this. We do it a little different, which is good. That's good. Doing it a little different is fine. But we're in the same book, right? We're in the same thoughts here. So again, check that out, www.thehopnerd.com. I think it's just /blog. I could be wrong because I'm not going to go look. But if you just go to the website and click blog, it's super duper easy to find. So let me tee all this up by saying that the perspectives that I'm going to share with you here, the thoughts, these ideas, these beliefs around how this works, it's from a mixture of experiences that I've had. It's from a mixture of experience first working internal to organizations. And let me even back that up a little bit farther and say working internal to very large traditional organizations. The organizations I'm speaking of are very large, massive global contractors that work primarily in, at least the divisions that I worked in, primarily in power maintenance and construction kind of stuff, right? You guys know I'm an old nuclear vagabond. Spent lots of years traveling from nuclear plant to nuclear plant, kind of doing those things with short-term, long-term projects, kind of everything in between. So my first experiences with trying to do things a bit differently started in that space, doing as much as I could get away with, right? Think big, traditional, with no desire to change whatsoever, working in a massive organization without a lot of authority to make some of these changes. But that's where I first really started to discover these ideas of doing things a bit differently, trying things a bit differently, really doing HOP without knowing that it was called HOP or safety differently or kind of anything else. And that's kind of a common theme here. And I even touch on that in this article a bit, that I look at that as a blessing at the time. Now, I know the Hop Nerd, that's rich coming from a guy that has a business and a podcast called The Hop Nerd, which we'll touch on that a little bit in a second too. But I found that to be a blessing because just seeing this constant freaking argument, and I don't know, I feel that it's more of like this kind of contrarian marketing, because always on the other side of that argument is always like, but let me sell you my 15-step guide to why my program is the best. And if you just do this guide, it's so simple, it's so clean. You just have to send me a lump sum payment of this to this bank account, and the safety utopia can be yours. And I know I'm picking a little bit here. That's not always the case, so take that for what it is. I'm picking. You can tell in my tone that I get a little frustrated with this kind of just nagging argument of the words that we put on to stuff, when it just feels like our time's better invested realizing that we, most of us in our world, have a shared common goal around making things a bit better. And I think if we can just rally around that a little bit more, then it would work out well. I link actually to an article from Clive Lloyd inside my article. I think it was called something along the lines of Stop Navel Gazing or something like that. But read that. I mean, it's Clive. No one can say it better. It's a great read. So definitely check that out as well. But where I'm going with that, before I got like a little mired down in the side rant, because I've done this a few times around the side rant, around that argument in the past few episodes, if you can't tell. But where I'm going is here. We started doing things a bit differently, working internal to those organizations, and really starting to try. That's where I was first exposed to trying to do things a bit differently, started cooking up my own thoughts and ideas around doing things a bit differently. And then after some years and years and years of doing that, I found myself working for a large and respectable and a high-performing power utility here in the States. And I was pumped and excited, and I got there a few years into this, really, before we started working on some serious change stuff. But I got there, and after spending a little bit of time there, I really discovered an organization that was really hungry for change. Down through the organization, it was just brutal. It was just brutal. Like the thing where it's like, you know, I'm driving a company truck and I kind of catch a tire on a curb. And then that got me 3 days off and a letter in my file, because you're not allowed to do that, because small things lead to big things. And because you curbed that tire, you're a horrible person. And here's a letter in your file, and we're going to fix you by making you more aware of not curbing tires by giving you lots and lots and lots of pain. We know that story. It's a story as old as time. So you just end up with pickup trucks with a lot of scuff marks on the tires and on the rims and dings and dents. And yeah, right, right. And that's just one example. I mean, that was basically the way that they approached everything, right, is that we're going to cure people of their pesky humanity, of their errors, by beating them. And then when they do real good, we'll give them a pizza party. And then when they do bad, we'll give them the cane again. And then we'll give them the pizza party. And eventually we do this with enough brutalism, then eventually things will get better. And of course they never did. It's just a workforce that was scared to speak, a workforce that was scared to be honest with leadership, a workforce that was hungry for change and ready for change and wanted to learn and improve and just better the work world that surrounds them, but completely lacking the ability to speak truth, completely lacking the ability to be honest, complete lack of trust, right? with some of the situation that I described. Now, what I'm going to say about this organization, they're a great organization. They're a great organization full of great people at all levels within this organization. Throughout all levels of this organization, that somehow got mired down in blame, shame, and punishment. Blame, shame, retrain, pain, more of the same. Trying to use that to grow towards operational excellence. They got mired down in that somewhere along the way in their journey. So things clearly had to change. And as I said, long before we ever labeled our efforts internal to this organization as human and organizational performance, where this really starts, it's not in a tactical execution plan of human and organizational performance. It's not in massive tactical blah, 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 change something plan. It's just not. That's not where any of this starts. It never starts there, at least to me. If you peel back the layers, that's not where it started. By the time you get to the point of a bit of a plan emerging, and we'll talk about some planning here in just a second, by the time you get there, there's been a lot of stuff that's happened beforehand. And what I mean by that is that it starts with conversations. Conversations shape the work worlds around us. Long before we started to call this HOP or we had any semblance of a plan, it began as conversations. And really, within this organization that I just described a bit, super duper secret conversations behind closed doors, often closed and locked doors, with like-minded folks from throughout the organization. Right? These folks that knew we're trying to do something a bit differently. We think a bit differently around these things than maybe some others, and usually others up and in position of authority within this organization. We would have these closed, locked door, super duper secret conversations where we would gather and we would talk about better assumptions, better beliefs, better ideas, better approaches. Again, these conversations were initially pretty secret because a lot of the crap that we would talk about was considered blasphemous by many of those folks up in the organization in positions of power and authority. Discussions around ideas like, you know, I don't think all events are actually preventable. I don't think everything's preventable. I just don't. I think zero is dumb. I think it's causing more and more silence in our organization. I don't think having pizza parties when we have long streaks of a lack of OSHA recordables and then having public floggings when we eventually have an OSHA recordable is a great way to know more. I just don't see that as working. I don't think those stupid human error clocks, because we have those stupid human error clocks that every department has to have proudly displayed at every corner of their floor. If you're in their corporate building, at every department on a plant site, if you're in a plant site, at the gates of the plant site that proudly declares, you know, we've gone 47 days since Bob screwed up last. I don't think that's working very well for us. I don't think this cycle of blame, shame, and retrain is working well for us. I don't agree with this. We're growing. The only thing that we're growing is silence within our organization. All these ideas that would at the time certainly have gotten us labeled as shitty leaders. And really what they would have said is, you clearly don't take safety seriously enough. That would have been more of the conversation. We'd have been labeled as uncaring, as not taking safety seriously enough, not taking it, just our approach to leadership seriously enough. And it would have more than likely resulted in us demoted or fired. Really. So we had these closed door secret conversations. That's where it started. We would share ideas. We would share around our books like they were dirty magazines. Right? Be like, look at this book. Look at this book. Like, read this. Oh my God. If so and so saw this, they would have a stroke. Like, read this. And we would share those books. We would vent about happenings in the company. We would talk about things that were going on, and we would really talk change. And we didn't realize it in that particular moment. But what we were really doing is we were starting our journey. What we were really doing is we were setting the stage for transformational change. Because from these conversations, these ideas, these better beliefs, they started to grow in the micro sense, but they started to grow because these conversations started to grow. They grew and grew over time. These ideas, they started to grow and they started to spread. We were doing things a bit backwards, which we'll touch on a little bit later, but pretty soon our secret conversations included some managers and directors and even a few vice presidents, all folks that had been thinking similar things for years. those folks that we talk about in HOP that maybe don't realize that they're doing kind of HOP stuff or doing things a bit differently, but they are, right? Those kind of folks, you know, now finding themselves in a group of people that wouldn't label them as uncaring or not taking things seriously enough, just because they wanted to have some critical conversations, apply some critical thinking beyond the dogma that exists in so many of our approaches, finding themselves in this group of folks that wouldn't label them as uncaring or not taking their role seriously enough because they don't want to beat people or blame and shame and retrain them, just because they hope to bring about meaningful and positive change to this business. Now they found their voice. They found a group of allies, and they grew the courage to begin to make change happen. And they did just that. These ideas that we were talking about, these conversations that we were having, as we would have them, folks would leave, and they would start to challenge a little bit. Huh? Yeah. When blame, shame, and retrain was pulled out as the first and the last and the only option, when things went a little bit sideways, people were starting to go, I don't think this is working well. Courage, a group of allies, all kind of stemming from these conversations. It started to grow. Change started to happen. We did just that. Over the course of some years, we grew these little secret meetings into a pretty highly successful change effort. So you're on this path of doing things a bit differently. Maybe you haven't even started having some of these conversations within your organization, or maybe what I just described to you sounds eerily familiar because I interface with so many of you. I interact with folks around the world that are on this journey, and those kind of conversations seem to be a similar occurrence, a similar happening within organizations as we start down this path. But now you're here, and what now? that's what now. You know, at the time of our original HOP journey, these resources, these ideas, these thoughts. Again, we didn't even know that it was called HOP or Safety Differently or Safety 2. Again, a blessing in my mind now. But at the time, other than a few books and pretty kind of scarce and obscure books and scarce and obscure websites or scarce and obscure white papers, scarce and obscure groups of practitioners, there wasn't much. There wasn't much out there if you just go do a little Googling, right? Do a little Google search and find something. You couldn't just do that like you can now. I'm happy to say that that's changed, right? That's changed dramatically over the years. This bit of a podcast and this this associated article over on the website becoming this a small part of this large and ever-growing body of knowledge around this stuff. But back to our key question of what now? And before we dive into that, I also feel the need to mention to you that these are just some of my thoughts. I'm not sold at all on this idea that there is one right way. We just made fun of that a second ago. That would be really shitty of me to tell you that there is one right way. I don't believe that there's one right way to bring HOP to life in an organization. In fact, I feel pretty freaking strongly in the opposite direction. I think there are numerous ways, if not infinite ways, to get things done within our work world and beyond. In my hillbillyism, I would say that there are more than one way to skin a dead cat, right? 100%. In fact, I would take that farther in my hillbillyism and say that you can't sling a dead cat without hitting a right way to probably do that. So there's your dose of my little bit of my hillbillyism. I want you to keep that in mind as we continue. I'm not so sure. In fact, I think quite the opposite, that there is one right way. Your journey will be unique because your organization is unique. It should be unique. Embrace this uniqueness that is associated with your organization and only your organization. That's what makes you your organization. That's what makes you cool. Don't lose that. Because HOP's not just a program. It's not just some crap that you can copy and paste into your organization. It's not a program to manage. So it's definitely not a freaking program that you can just roll out. Back to those A, B, C, D, 1, 2, 3 guides that are just loads of shit. They're just crocks of shit. So let's really start here and say that to me, human and organizational performance, if I'm going to define it to you personally, I think of HOP as a collection of better beliefs, assumptions, thoughts, and ideas from diverse and varying sources applied through the lens of a core set of principles. Our 5, sometimes 6, as we know around Control Save Lives, 5 key HOP principles. So what I want you to think of this as, I want you to think of this as a guide, as a playbook, really. If something's not working for you, tweak it, change it, call an audible or call a different play. Stay flexible, keep adapting, but at the core of this, stick with those HOP principles. They won't steer you wrong. Now, what I want to get into this bit of a guide here is really kind of the key piece of like pre-planning and planning a bit, some milestones, I guess, or maturity points with your journey, I guess, a bit of a roadmap. What I want you to really do is I want you to go over to the website and I want you to check out the associated blog or article post, whatever the heck you want to call that thing, that really goes along with what we're talking about today. Because over there, we address, I address a lot of those kind of key questions around this stuff. Around embracing the journey, around this idea, you know, that leaders often bring up, well, HOP's too soft. If you take away my stick, right? We talk about all that stuff in much more depth, in much more detail over in that, right? We talk more about this idea of not approaching these things with a traditional mindset, that HOP is an operating philosophy, not just some program to manage, and that how you grow HOP is how you grow human and organizational performance within your organization is by reshaping organizational beliefs and assumptions over time in a bit of a better direction. We talk about all that in much more detail over in that article. So go check that out at thehopnerd.com. The pieces I'm going to talk to you about today really revolve around this idea of planning considerations prior to your journey, and then a bit of a roadmap, a bit of a beaten path that we know that tends to lead us towards success with human and organizational performance. And these planning considerations are where I want to start. And those 3 key planning considerations, again, to me, is organizational readiness, forming our kind of core team or our grouping of bright spots, and employee involvement. So organizational readiness, to me, it's this. Where are you currently at? You can't just go do HOP to your company. It doesn't work like that, right? Back to this, the fact, right? I'm going to say this a million times, so just prepare your ear holes for that. But it's not a program. It's not a program to manage. And it's not some crap that you just go do to your company. It doesn't work like that. You can't just go will better beliefs and assumptions into your organization. You can't just go say, hey, believe better. Like it just doesn't work. So where are you currently at? Seek to understand the current state of your particular organization and define a bit where you think you want to go. This assessment of organizational readiness will allow you the starting point. It'll allow you at least a bit of a benchmark or something, whatever fancy pants corporate word we want to put on there. It'll give you a watermark. I don't know. We'll come up with one. But it'll give you a starting point to kind of plan and plot a bit from. right? If you want to go in and start with hop, and your organization already does a real good job around not blaming and shaming, you probably don't need to go beat that drum like till the end of time, when maybe you need to go spend a little bit more time focused on something else, right? You need to know where you're at so you can kind of start to lay that foundation, at least with a bit of an accurate understanding of where the organization is currently at with its beliefs and assumptions. So a bit of a side story here that I'm going to kind of try to cover really briefly here. Again, I don't want to keep tooting my horn about the article, but you can go read it if you want to. But in our initial efforts with that that big reputable power company, after we were having these conversations, and these conversations eventually turned into a bit of a grouping of bright spots, this group of hop advocates, right? These bright spots, our little hop team, once we kind of had that started to get developed, we had that kind of our arms wrapped around that. We armed this group of folks, that was made up of, you know, like me and some leaders, but not just me and some leaders, but like a lot of frontline folks, like linemen and operators and like the person that does the mail. And like you know what I mean, a really good diverse and varying group, a good cross section of the organization. Once we had that developed, we armed them with some better questions, a way of capturing the input that they received, and we sent them off into the organization. We gave them time and space and the ability to go out and have face-to-face conversations with about 15% of the organization. Again, this is mostly frontline folks, facilitating these conversations with everybody from other frontline employees to managers to the board to vice presidents and everything in between. Just having conversations, seeking to tap into the current lived operational reality of the organization, right? Varying perspectives. Where did we come up with 15%? We went, and if you listen, you know what that sound is. You know what the... That's me picking a number out of thin air. We picked it out of thin air. It was a best guess. We knew that we needed to capture a wide perspective of context within this organization, a wide perspective of lived operational reality within this organization. But we also knew that it wouldn't work if we said we need to capture 100% of everyone's perspective within this organization that employed over 7,000 full-time employees across multiple states, plus contractors, because we tapped into that as well. We just couldn't, that just wouldn't work. Now, we went for 15% and we hit that. I think if I remember correctly, we exceeded it just a little bit. But once we captured this good chunk of information, we were able to tell a reasonably accurate story of that current lived operational reality within this particular company at that time. It was a good snapshot. Now, a really interesting part here that he really helps drive some of our change efforts as well is that those higher up in the organization, like senior director and above, they didn't really realize how brutal it was, that perspective. They didn't understand that. They thought, well, somebody bumped a curb with the tire. They messed up, and they know they messed up. Damn it, and they know they deserve this, and they know we're only doing it to them because we love them. They didn't realize. From some of their statements, it was stuff like, holy crap, there's no way you're lying. They don't feel this way. Nuh-uh. No. My favorite was just, it all looked well from up here. Because it kind of sort of did. So there was a lot of really interesting positive side effects that came from this effort, right? We obviously, it met our goal of capturing a bit of an understanding about the readiness of the organization where we were currently at, allowing us to plot where we wanted to go, and then allowing us to build a bit of a plan as to what that looked like. But some more interesting side effects, positive side effects from this, is that it helps drive our change effort because those higher in the organization now understood a bit more, right? They knew more. They got to tap into operational reality because we went up there and showed it to them. We told that story, and we told that story really, really, really well. So it opened many eyes up through the organization for the need for change. And through the act of telling the story and telling it extremely well in all directions throughout the organization, this initial effort also resulted in a greater understanding of the executive perspective down through the organization and in the opposite direction, along with the frontline perspective up through the organization. The executives, who kind of, when you talk to them, they would share these I would call them common beliefs when you don't have enough exposure to reality within your organizations at those levels. They had these pretty common beliefs that we hear tossed around. Well, they're always just trying to get something over on this company. If you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. If you have a pizza party, our employees will steal half the pizzas just to take home, because just, you know, where we look at people as shit. that was just the view. I'm just stating what the view was at the time. It was, they viewed them as the problem. They viewed them as uncaring, at least not as caring as they were, right? I care a bunch because I'm here. I'm invested. I'm the executive. They're just lazy, like those kind of views, always trying to get something over on the company kind of views. They no longer viewed them as that. They read these stories of struggles and frustrations and this brutalism that the organization was pushing down through the organization. And they went, well, how did we end up here? This inability to be honest and all of that stuff that we've touched on so much and that we touch on all the time, that started to change. That started to change. And the frontline perspective of those executives up through the organization started to change. The frontline no longer viewed these executives as villains. Go with me on a little bit of an imagination trip here. It's like the 80s kind of law office set from a movie, you know, where it's like wood paneling and cigar smoke. You know what I'm talking about, like the leather furniture, like that kind of thing. That's how the frontline viewed the executive office space. And I'm going farther than the office space because where I'm going with this is they viewed them kind of as villains in that movie, like sitting in their offices, sipping scotch, smoking cigars, putting golf balls into the cup that they just chugged scotch out of, all sitting around, you know, plotting how they were going to do nothing but maximize profits and make their employees miserable. That changed. That changed. This initial wave of what really was operational learning, of seeking to understand lived operational reality where things were currently at, it helped to bridge many of those misunderstandings and grow industrial empathy up, down, sideways throughout the organization. And it was just the start of a massive effort, but it got things off on the right foot. So seeking to understand where your organization is currently at, you can do that in a ton of different ways. I just told you kind of how we did it. And I tend to help organizations do it that way and several other ways. There are a lot of different ways that you can do that, but you should. You should seek to understand where you're currently at, come up with an idea of where you want to go so you can plot a bit of a course. The next piece of this is core team creation. And I've kind of hinted around that core team in what we were just saying. But it's this question: who are your internal champions? Who are the folks that are going to do this work? Because it's a lift. You need people to actually do the work of HOP, like the tactical stuff that you got to do. Who are those knowledgeable and passionate folks that will help you bring this change about? And a lot of times I find that these are folks in our companies that are HOP folks that a lot of times just don't know that they're HOP folks. And what I mean by that is take a hard look at that list of HOP principles and think of those people. Who are those people that are popping into your mind that, whether they realize it or not, are already living and or leading by those principles? I bet you that a couple folks came to mind. All right, that's where you start. Those are the first few names of your little grouping of bright spots. Find these people, get them together, set them up for success, and provide them with adequate time, resources, authority, ability to and support. Support, because this can be a bit of a trudge through the mud, the support to do this task, to take on the work of actually bringing HOP to life. As I said, this should be a mixture of folks. It shouldn't just be your safety folks. It shouldn't just be a bunch of leaders. And as I mentioned safety folks, because that's often the first kind of wave of HOP deployment, is they go, this sounds like a safety thing, so now it's a safety thing. So, hey, safety people, go do this safety thing and get it done by next Thursday. Don't do that. This should be a diverse and varying group of people, a mixture of frontline folks and support folks and some leaders and on and on and on and on. It's just that a good diverse mix of people, perspectives, ideas, thoughts, it just works well. It just works well. We know that this works well. All right, so it should be a little bit of everything. And from this initial story that we've been kind of chatting about around this one with examining for organizational readiness and kind of on and on working within this kind of big reputable power generating company, we had a little bit of everybody. on that team. And if I remember correctly, our total team size was maybe about 20 folks. It was about 20 folks. Some did a lot more, some did a lot less. Yeah, but it was about 20 folks that would come together, right? It was about 20 folks that was our little grouping of bright spots, our hop army, if you will. And it worked extremely well. It wasn't their title that made it work well. It was their passion. Everyone on that little team wanted to be there. They volunteered for it. They wanted to make things better. A lot of them were folks that were in those initial super duper secret closed door conversations that we're talking about before. No, right? They were part of that. They were ride or die. They were courageous, and that made them unstoppable. They wanted to be there. They were ride or die. They were courageous. They were passionate. That made this little group of folks unstoppable. That's what makes it work well. Now, the other piece of this pre-planning is employee involvement. And I want you to ask yourself this question. No matter where you're at on your hop journey, how are you going to place the voice of your employees, the story of normal work, at the center of this change? How are you going to ensure that they have a voice, that their voice is heard? Again, be super cautious not to try to do hop to your organization, not to try to do hop down through your organization, to do hop to your front line. We'll get there. Involve your employees. Listen to them. Learn from them. And be sure that their voice is heard, their ideas, their thoughts, that this shines through, that it's shown through in the results of these efforts. So back to our initial story, the one that we keep hitting on here. High-performing, reputable power company. You know where I'm going with this. We tried to prove it and prove it early on in our journey. The folks in this company had heard this song. They had seen this dance. They had watched this show, and they had watched it for years. You cannot fault those folks for wanting a little proof. Hell, I wanted some proof, right? You can't fault people for that, because they had heard this. We're gonna do better. We're gonna do things differently. We're doing things differently. Now we're going to smile when we blame, shame, and retrain you. Now we're going to demand that you say thank you after we beat you. Like they've seen this. You can't fault them for needing some evidence, for having us prove it to them that we didn't. This wasn't just hot air. We meant this. So we aggressively pursued quick wins when they were available, aggressively, right? Aggressively, rapid improvement strategies where it made sense to do so. We involved and empowered those nearest to the work, learning more and creating improvements with them through the use of things like learning teams. And we made it damn sure, 110% sure, if that thing affected them, if they had to use that form, if they had to use that rule, if they had to use that something, if it impacted them or involved them in any way, shape, or form, we made it damn sure that they were a part of that, that they had a seat at that table. If it affected them or their crews, they had a voice. We made damn sure that they had that seat at the table. Really, we stopped doing crap to them. We stopped doing stuff for them, and we started doing stuff with them. We talk a lot about that shift from doing to doing with in 10 Ideas. If you want to go check out 10 Ideas to Make Safety Suck Less, if you haven't read the book and you want to explore that thought a bit more deeply, it's there. It's a whole chapter. It's one of the 10 ideas. Stop doing crap to people. So you can go check that out. Now, with these planning considerations really well thought out and some of those kind of initial steps, we're having those conversations. We've been having those secret conversations for a while. We know where our organization is currently at. We're starting to develop our little hop team, our grouping of bright spots, and we have some good thoughts going on, some good ideas on how we're going to make sure that our employees' voice is shown through in these efforts. We're starting to talk about or even beginning to use operational learning mechanisms such as learning teams or learning explorations, or at the very least, we're having operationally curious conversations. We're seeking to understand, right? We're doing that. We figured out how we're going to have that element within these approaches, within our plan. The next part of this is really, really where kind of the journey, the work of the journey begins. Andrea Baker wrote a really great article on this back in 2019, and it was one of the first articles that I'd seen really around the journey. And she described it in five phases of human and organizational performance integration, right? And it's this: leadership interest, building hop fluency, operational learning, alignment, and safeguard management. So leadership interest is exactly what it sounds like. And that sounds familiar to many of our change efforts. You need to get those key allies. You need to gain some of that leadership support within your organization. You need to find leadership champions. Right? You need those allies in all levels, really, of the organization as you start to go down this path, but especially up there. You need them. I did a recent episode of the pod where I was joined by the amazing Stephen Scott, and I love Steve and kind of everything he's got going on. Make sure you go check Stephen out, follow along. He's on a lot of public hop classes. He's a consultant. He's out there doing kind of the stuff that I'm doing, and he does a great job with it, so make sure you check Stephen out. But during this episode, he shared this idea that for every hour you spend talking hop with frontline folks, you should probably spend at least 4 hours with leaders, right? Because we get this mixed up. We think it's the opposite because that's how we've done safety stuff, right? And again, hop's not safety stuff. Hop is hop. So let's clear the air there, right? Hop is not a safety thing. Can you use hop? Does it help us in the safety space? 100%. Does it help us in the quality space? 100%. Does it help us in the environmental space? Absolutely, 100%. Can it help us in just general organizational improvement? Absolutely. Can it help us in efficiency? Absolutely. Can it help? And on, right? So you get where I'm going. So don't get mired down in the hop is safety thing, because that's minimizing your investment here. So side rant over. But where I'm going with this is we've tried to do it like we've done safety stuff where employee safety, it hurts the employee. When things go wrong, that employee is the nearest to the thing that's gone wrong. So safety stuff we need to do to the employee that's nearest to the work, to the employee that can get hurt. We need to do safety down to the front line. Hop is the opposite. Hop is an operating philosophy. Hop goes the other direction. So be cautious not to get those things skewed, not to get those things reversed. Again, that's not a rule. But it's a great way of putting it. I love that. That's about the best way that I've heard that put in a long time. Again, it's not a rule, but the point remains the same. You should invest the vast majority of your efforts into gaining leadership interest and building hop fluency with leaders throughout your organization. Again, why? Because hop isn't a program to roll out. It's not something that you do down to the front line. It's an operating philosophy. And we know this because if you go out and you have a 4-hour session on human and organizational performance with the front line folks, what are they going to do? Well, you might have done this. You might have done this. I know this from experience because we made this mistake because we were amped right early on in our journey. Let's go tell everybody about hop. When you get through those five principles, when you get through talking about learning and all these different pieces that we spend so much time talking about around human and organizational performance, you spend all that time and you get to the end of that session with those frontline folks, those at the sharp end of work, they look at you and go, well, duh. I've been telling you idiots this for years. You don't need to tell me this. You need to go up there and tell them that. And they're right. They're right. So back to that general kind of statement. For every hour you spend with the frontline folks talking about hop, you should probably spend 4 with leaders. Growing interest, building hop fluency. Now, you can take this farther. I don't just mean like formalized hop training stuff. You can do that, and we can help you with that at the Hop Nerd LLC if you need a hand with that. But it's this. It's building relationships with those leaders. It's mentoring them, especially when things get weird, when things get challenging post-event. Like, blame shame's not going to work here. Let's talk through this. Don't just go beat people. It's teaching some of these concepts to them. It's making the case for change. It's on and on and on. It's bringing in possible outside help. Like, you can call me at the Hop Nerd LLC. You can call Steven, who we were just talking about. All that helped. All that can help a bunch. What I ended up doing a lot is we did formalize stuff. We brought in outside folks, some great outside folks. We did mentoring with leaders. We paired them up with some of our frontline folks on our little hop teams. We taught them these concepts. We made the case for change back to our initial kind of pulsing efforts and sharing that story of what it looked like down through the organization, a new perspective, a different perspective that they hadn't really tapped into before we did all that. But then what I would also do, because I'm weird, is I would focus a lot on that relationship side. I'm the person that I would just give people books randomly, right? Like, hey, VP, it's good to see you. Oh, wait a second, man. I got something for you. Here's this book called Humble Inquiry. You need to read this. You should tell, hey, check out this book. This is a new one from Todd. Here's another book from Sid. Make sure you check this out. Oh, and check out this episode of this podcast, just random email. Hey, I was listening to this and I thought of you. I thought you might find it interesting. Hey, you got a few minutes? you want to go, like, let's get out of here and go grab a cup of coffee. I want to pick your brain on some hop stuff. Tell me what you think about this. Try this idea on for size and doing that. That's a great way. There were people within our organization that, again, I was the new person. I was only, you know, a few years into this when we started the journey with this particular organization. Slowly tweaking, changing, slowly tweaking, changing. And then, you know, we secret conversations. And then we're at this point of like a more formalized kind of massive change effort throughout this massive organization. I was still the new person, and I would still get a lot of the conversation of, you just don't know. You don't know him. You don't know her. You don't know that VP. You're just dinosaurs. Oh, you can't teach those dogs new tricks. Yeah, good luck. That's not the mountain you want to die on. I cut that conversation so much. And don't get me wrong. I love a good dose of history. It can be helpful. It most certainly can. But I couldn't give up on those folks. They were too good of people. There's no way. And me sitting there going, they'll never change, and then blaming them for this idea that they would never change, that seemed kind of dumb, too. It was this. It was growing those relationships with them, and it was spending time with them and seeking to understand their perspectives and their beliefs and their assumptions and where those things come from, and just investing that time, not just looking at them from afar and going, huh, everybody told me they're never going to change, and I don't need to die on that mountain. I don't need to die on that hill. That's not, no. It was sending them the random book in the mail. It was dragging them out for a cup of coffee, dragging them out to lunch, and not making them pay just because they're the most senior person, but just dragging them out to lunch, sending them that episode of that podcast. And I'm really happy to report that those folks that were dinosaurs and evil, bad leaders almost never were. They almost never were. And some of them even became some of the biggest hop champions in our organization. Grow those relationships, spend time with them, mentor them. Sorry, I'm going way deep on this one, but it's important. It's super important. Now, the next piece is building hop fluency throughout your organization, and that is the educational component of your organization. That's where you're really doing the work of maybe teaching some of the more formalized classes, maybe having consultants come in and help you teach some of these classes, developing your internal team to teach some of these classes. It's growing those ideas. It's providing hop information sessions. I really like a good, healthy, just open discussion. I don't think it has to be so formal with all those slides and all that crap. I think just doing that internally or bringing in folks and doing some of those things, these agendaless conversations, just talking through these ideas and exploring questions and exploring thoughts, having maybe some of that fundamental training, teaching learning teams, teaching learning explorations. It's that kind of shift. It's even shifting our internal messaging and the way that we talk about things as a company within our organization. It's those things. It's building that hop fluency. You do that. You do that long enough. Really what we're talking about is we're growing better beliefs and assumptions over time. We're shifting organizational beliefs and assumptions through this focused effort. Eventually, you'll start to hear the change. Your company will begin to speak hop, right? When stuff that doesn't sound like it aligns with those principles starts to come up, when somebody gets, what a dummy, we just need to write them up, it sounds weird to the company. You go, what? And many others will go, what? Wait a second, wait, you're off base here. You know, air is normal. Like, beating this person is not going to make things any better. It'll change. You'll hear that from if to when kind of failure conversation, from who to what, kind of all those different key shifts you'll hear. Now, we've been talking operational learning through this entire thing, but that's a kind of a key area of maturity. We should be operationally learning from the very get-go. We talked organizational readiness and using operational learning to do that. We should get operational learning up and functioning, at least on some form of a scale, pretty early and at the onset of our journey, in my opinion. But at this point, as you've built enough hop fluency, you really start to embrace these tools. You really start to embed these tools within to the organization. And we know operational learning. We've talked about a bunch of learning teams, learning explorations, operationally curious conversations, the kind of pulsing operational learning kind of approach that we talked at the beginning. It's expanding the use of learning teams. It's gaining more and more and more focus on this kind of context-rich information. The old answers of somebody messed up, somebody screwed up. It just doesn't cut it for us anymore. We start to begin to see more independent use of learning teams, like crews starting to use some of these things, which sometimes scares us because, oh my God, they did a learning team without permission. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm going to tell you something that you should already know. But if somebody comes to you and you're a leader in an organization and say, hey, you know, we had a little bit of an issue, and me and my crew, we took it upon ourselves to do a learning team, and we made things a little bit better. We need a little bit of help with this one because this is a pretty big lift. Can you, you know, some, we need a little authority and resources here, but we found something and we made it a little bit better. There's so much worse that can happen in our work world than somebody coming to you and telling you that, hey, we had a problem and we kind of fixed most of it for ourselves. You're going to start to see those things start to emerge. And when they do, don't panic. There are far worse days than someone telling you that they just fixed their own problem. there really are. But what we're really saying is that we're seeing this increasing curiosity about normal work around this story of how things normally go well and occasionally go wrong. Now we move more towards kind of this alignment phase, this kind of HOP maturity point where we really start to embed HOP principles. We're really starting to embed operational learning mechanisms into your existing systems, your processes, your programs. We're really beginning to tweak things and declutter things and kind of on and on and on. It, this really looks like as we start to alter our processes, our programs, we start to bring stuff into alignment with these principles. If it doesn't fit within those principles, we tend to start to declutter, right? We start to kind of cut and slice and dice. And I'm not telling you to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. I'm telling you to do this thoughtfully, but use those principles as kind of the lens, right? That's the lens. We start decluttering rules and processes and programs and needless and useless and just bureaucracy crap. We start to really create a HOP framework also within our organization to ensure that HOP is sustainable, because that's going to be unique to you as well, but it's a question that you should ask. That's something that worries me a bunch, and I spend a bunch of time talking to organizations about this, is you've got this grouping of bright spots. You've got those HOP champions. You probably even have some HOP super duper champions within your organizations. When that HOP super duper champion and all those HOP focused leaders that are like your super duper HOP leaders in varying levels of the organization, when that super duper HOP vice president, that vice president that really lives and leads with these principles within the organization, when those folks get poached by your competitors, when those folks get an offer they can't refuse and they leave, can you ask yourself this question and answer it positively? Are we still a HOP-based company? Because we know how that goes. So if we're only a one leader change out away from not being a HOP company anymore, we're not sustainable. We're not sustainable. Where this embedding and alignment really goes over time, but you got to build in sustainability in the meantime, because things shake up, things change, people come, people leave, right? It's how this works, it's life. Where we really want to end up, we are so aligned, we're so embedded with these things that we don't even really call it HOP anymore. I think we just call it HOP because we had to, or we call it safety differently, or we call it doing things differently, or we call it getting really good at learning, or whatever the heck we call it, whatever fancy pants internal branding we come up with. Where we really want to get is not calling it anything. We want to get to where it's like, yeah, that's just our beliefs and assumptions. That's not HOP. That's just how we do business. That's just who we are. Now, another piece of this is safeguards management. With these concepts, these ideas, these things really embedded within your organization, using this operational learning, this operational reality game through operational learning mechanisms such as learning teams and learning explorations, we seek to continuously and collaboratively design better and manage safeguards and life-saving controls. Right, so we know like the good, the bad, the ugly, and the scary. This is working on the scary part of that equation. Bettering of existing controls and safeguards around our areas of critical risk, bettering of system designs, especially around our areas of critical risk, ongoing operational learning around our areas of critical risk, and on and on and on and on and on. Those are the five key phases, as described originally by Andrea Baker. Again, I think it was on safetydifferently.com. The original article is still out there if you want to Google that and read the original article. It's over there. You can check that out. We talked about those three key planning considerations as we started this thing, and we talked about the conversations. So as we said, a bit of a recap, and then I want to wrap up with a couple final things. I'm sorry if this is a long one, but it's a deep subject. And again, the article is over there if you want to explore it even more deeply, because if you're on this journey, or especially if you're just thinking about starting this journey, this is all crap that I wish somebody would have told me when we first started. Hopefully some of this helps you to propel you to start, or propel you farther along this path, or at least to let you know you're not crazy. At the very least, I hope that it helps you to maybe avoid some of our mistakes and missteps and some of our best guesses we had to take that ended up being not so best guesses in the long run. I hope that it helps you in that space. So go check out that article. But let's play this out a bit like double time, fast speed, IRL. Avery taught me what IRL means. It means in real life. So now you're part of the hip cool dad club too, IRL. In real life, it plays out oftentimes like this. We start with those super duper secret conversations, those conversations that we're technically not allowed to be having, or maybe it's not that we're not allowed to be having them, but if somebody heard us having them in the wrong position of authority and influence within the organization, we might no longer work for the organization anymore. Those conversations where we're starting, we're planting the seeds, we're beginning to discuss these ideas of doing things differently. It's almost always where it starts. This little group of folks that tends to grow and grow and grow over time, we kind of start there. And then we move towards a bit of a more formalized approach. Now, before we get to that point, we have those three planning considerations, right? Organizational readiness, grouping of bright spots, and how are we going to make sure that employee involvement is at the heart of what we're doing here. And then we move into those five phases of HOP integration that we just talked about. Leadership interest, building HOP fluency, operational learning, alignment, and safeguard management. That's a pretty straightforward beaten path that we tend to see. Is it the only path? Heck no, it's not. There again, you can sling a dead cat and find a good way to do this. You most certainly can embrace your uniqueness. And when it comes to this planning stuff, I also feel the need to insert this, because I insert this all the time, but you just need to hear it, because we're good at making plans. We're good at making super duper rigid strategic plans. And we're super duper good at thinking that if we can't follow those plans exactly, then we suck. And that's not true. This plan should be flexible. It shouldn't be rigid. It should be, you should be adapting and figuring out and tweaking and changing and pushing stuff out and pulling stuff up and on and on and on. You should have a plan. You should have a plan that's going to a bit of that roadmap, because that's really what we're talking about. A bit of a playbook, a bit of some ideas on where it is that you're at, where you hope to go, and how you're going to get there. But you need to stay flexible. You don't want to get super rigid with this stuff, right? So keep that in mind as you go. Now, I wanted to mention to you doing things a bit backwards, because it sounds a bit backwards. That big traditional power company, that high-performing and reputable power company, we did things a bit backwards. And what I mean by that is we brought HOP to life within this organization with very little high-level or corporate-level leadership interest or support. But what we did is we used that success to gain leadership interest and support. We went out and we learned as much as we possibly could, and we told that story extremely well. We mentioned that, and that opened many, many eyes. When people told us that operational learning, that learning teams was crap from up in the organization, and that we just love our five wives and our RCAs, I think that came out and sounded like five wives. They did not have five wives. They had five whys, a lot of five whys. These RCAs and ACAs and this and that and this and that and this and that. The learning teams were too flexible, and we can't do that. People aren't going to learn anything, blah. We went out and we did them both. When we had rules that said we had to do RCAs, guess what we did? We would do the RCA, and we would go do a learning team separate from that, independent from that, and then we would compare. A little bit of double work, but we would compare, and we would tell that story extremely well up and throughout the organization. We took these ideas, these principles, these bright spots, and we expanded them. We showed success through them. We showed that there was a better way, that we could change, that we could grow in this big traditional organization that was very slow to change. We showed that we could change, and change rapidly in some ways, right? So we did things a bit backwards. We didn't just start out with one or two people going, we have a grand idea, and then we didn't go beg for executive permission. We just started doing what we could differently. We were having those interesting conversations. We grew those conversations, and we started to see results. We started to show success, and then we told that story, and we told that story extremely well up and throughout that organization. And pretty soon, some of those leaders that told us at the beginning or would have told us that we were beginning, and some of them did tell us at the very beginning that we were full of crap and this would never work here. They were very quick to say, this was my idea from the very beginning. This was under my direction. We'd good. That's fine. I don't care. It worked. So you can do things a bit backwards. So just because you don't have that high level, hoorah, rah, go make change, we got your back from the very get-go, you can earn it. You can still make it happen. Now, the last thing that I want to say with this is temper your expectations and stick to the principles. Okay, that's the last two things. And I promise I'm going to shut up. I know I'm an hour into this thing, but it's a long one, but I think it's a good one. It's all the information that I know that I would have loved to have heard when we first started. This in particular, temper your expectations. I struggled, and we did an episode of this, so you can go back and find that episode around some of these key things with the journey. But I struggled with the slowness at first, and then once the slowness was out of the way, things moved rapidly. And I mean, it was exciting, and it was edgy and a little bit punk rock, and we were making big change, and then it slowed down. And then we would take 10 steps forward and 3 steps back and 10 steps forward and then 12 steps back. Temper your expectations. Temper your expectations. I'm going to say it one more time because I needed somebody to tell it to me 3 times. Temper your expectations. The indicators of big progress within your organization will often be heard. They'll often be seen. They'll often be found in the little things that we tend to overlook as people. It is, right? Whenever you start feeling frustrated, go listen to the stories of people down and throughout your organization. When you hear those stories of things getting better, when you hear that story of, you know, doesn't suck nearly as bad, that's a huge, huge win. When you see the organization start to move in a bit of a better direction with our response, when we move from reacting with emotion and panic and distrust and blame and shame and retrain when things are a little bit sideways, and they start to move more towards that response that is, we're curious and we want to understand and we want to improve and we don't want to blame, shame, and retrain. We don't want to seek retribution. We want to seek restoration. When you see those things start to take place, when you start to hear that story from folks down through the organization, when you start hearing those better experiences, those are huge indicators. Even if it's not quite where we would hope that it is yet, even if it's not this massive and grand change that you had hoped for initially, it's slow. It is slow, painfully slow. Be patient. Be patient. Temper your expectations. When you get frustrated, go spend time with folks nearest to the work and hear. Listen, genuinely listen to how things are getting better. Just the fact that people are willing to open up with you and share with you their raw and real stories of this deal sucks, but that thing over there doesn't suck nearly as much. Just the fact that you're hearing these stories of normal work, it tells you that you're moving in the right direction. When you're feeling tired, when you're feeling worn out, go spend time listening to the stories contained within your organization. And as I said, stick to the principles. That's the last thing. And I promise, I'm going to shut up. I promise. No matter where your organization finds itself on its human and organizational performance journey, always keep those 5 principles, these better ideas, these better beliefs, these tenets of safety differently, the 10 ideas that we talk about so much, keep them at the heart of your efforts. Lean into them. When things get weird, lean into them. When things go wrong, lean into them. When your journey starts to move backwards, lean into them. When a learning team falls super duper flat, lean into them. When you have a person step way outside of kind of where you're at and just beat and tar and feather people for a little bit of an error, lean into these principles. When things get weird, lean into these principles. When things get challenging, lean into them that much harder. When things start to move backwards, lean into them. When you find yourself confused or unsure or left with no good options, allow these principles, these concepts, these ideas allow them to guide you. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast, the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help of bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.